We're back in OUJ Lycee's Shir Kol on the Parsha. Today we're going to be learning Parshat Pinchas. Before we enter into Parshat Pinchas, just as a note, I've been receiving some really, really nice emails from all over the place from Pethi Shirim. One topic came up, one from an email from a very sweet gentleman who's from the graduating class of YU of 1970, and another one today from somebody who listens in from Melbourne, Australia, so we're going international. But the question was, who's the basis of these shirim? I often say my Rebbe. So there are a lot of reasons why I don't always state who it is by name, and I actually detailed that for the gentleman from YU's graduating class of 70. Be it as it may, the majority of the material when I'm drawing from one place is from my Rebbe means Rav Amos Luban, who teaches primarily Yeshivat Netiv Aryeh, somebody who I've been close to for the last decade and been studying his Torah the last decade, and also who his philosophy is very much not just about giving over content, but teaching you how to think. You know, we talk about like that's good thinking, meaning that's something which is positive and should be praised and should be encouraged. That you know the Torah is infinite, and even more important than the details of what we learn is to be able to create a vibrant mind that can continue to look at Chumash and look at Psukim and keep developing it over the course of a lifetime. So a lot of it then gets channeled very differently when I process it myself. So either way, the basis of the material comes from Rav Amos and the places that he draws from, but I take full responsibility for what ends up happening in these shirim once, 10 years later, and after thinking about it a lot, and after taking his cues to think about it in the ways that he trained me to think. But that's where a lot of it comes from. So to answer that question, which seems to be, it came out twice in the last 2 weeks, so I figured we'd say it out loud. Another question that came up also, which was, just so everybody's aware, from even people in the shir, that when the shirim go online, if you open it up on your web browser on a computer, the source sheets are all there, so you can download the source sheets. Yeah, you say, people in the room also with me, like, what is that? Yeah. YU Torah allows you to upload not just the shir, but the source sheets as well, so if you ever want to reference the shirim, or if you're listening online, the source sheets are all there as a link in the individual shir in which they take place. With that as background, or preface, let's jump into Parshat Pinchas. Okay. As we mentioned last time, and we talked about last week in Parshat Balak, that we were going to deal with the last paragraph of Parshat Balak more fully this week in the context of Parshat Pinchas, and the reason why is because the last paragraph of Parshat Balak doesn't seem to belong to Parshat Balak. We already connected it in our own way within the context of last year, but on a simple pshat level, it doesn't seem to belong there. All of Parshat Balak is this whole sort of zoom out, totally different episode, dealing outside of the context of Bnei Yisrael, from the outside looking in, this struggle between Bracha and Klala. And then the very end of the Parsha is this horrifying, terrible incident where the Benot Moav come and try to seduce Bnei Yisrael. They're successful. There's a plague. The plague wipes out 24,000 of Klal Yisrael. It culminates in a terrible incident that actually happens to take place in front of Moshe and Aaron, and the only one to stand up is Pinchas. Pinchas kills Zimri and Cosby in that moment, and then that comes into our Parsha, the second half of that very same story. Pinchas, and we're reflecting on what Pinchas did in that last odd paragraph stuck on to the end of Parshat Balak. We then talk about the response to Pinchas in the beginning of Parshat Pinchas, which is that he's given a brit shalom. He's given kehuna, that for reasons that Rashi gets into, even though he is from Aaron's family, he didn't have kehuna before, and now he does receive kehuna. But the story is broken up into two. And one of the things we're going to want to try to figure out is, which parsha does it belong to? Well, it seems to belong to both. If half is in one, half is in the other, it seems to belong to both, but either way, it's odd. On the one hand, in what way does this issue of what happens with the Benot Moav, the seduction of Bnei Yisrael, the Arayot that happens there, how does that relate to Parshat Balak? And on the flip side, how does it introduce Parshat Pinchas? What comes right after in Parshat Pinchas? What comes right after the end of the story of Pinchas? So take a look inside, in source number one. The concluding pasuk of that paragraph sort of reads as follows. Source number one. It was after the plague that had wiped out 24,000 of Klal Yisrael as a response to the Benot Moav. What do we have here? The counting. Not only a counting, it's the second counting of Sefer Midbar, which itself is the book of counting. It's not the book of numbers, it's the book of counting. Chumash HaPikudim. And so we had that first counting in Parshat Bamidbar. We have this second counting now in Parshat Pinchas. So again, on a story level, there seems to be no connection between the story of the Benot Moav, that it would open up the Parsha, be the Rosh of the Parsha, and then lead into this huge, I'd say half the Parsha is basically taken up by this census, this counting of Bnei Yisrael. There's a little bit in the middle, and then a huge other chunk of the Parsha as we go through the Korbanot and Musafim by all of the Moadim. Just as an overview of the Parsha. So what's the connection? Now, we could say, maybe there's a connection, maybe there's not a connection, and the way that we discuss things in our Shirim, we presume that there is a connection. But we don't even need to presume that there's a connection, because we have here an incredibly odd occurrence, a very unusual occurrence that all of Chumash, when we, in, as we learn together, critically analyze text, as Chazal tell us, we're meant to use certain cues. What cues exist in the text? Midrash Ha'aretz, come on. Thank you. The Parsha P'tuchot and Stumot. When a Parsha P'tucha is when there's a full break in the text of the Torah and it starts a new paragraph. Or a Stuma is when there's a break but the Torah continues on the same line. That's a shorter break, a less significant break, but still a break nonetheless. And here what happens is there's not just a Parsha P'tucha, there's a Parsha P'tucha in the middle of a Pasuk. The way that it's structured on your sheets is the way that it appears in the Chumash, the way that it appears in the Sefer Torah. Vayihi acharei ha-magefa, paragraph break in the middle of the pasuk. Vayomar Hashem al Moshe v'Elazar ben Aaron k'nei l'emor asu adroch b'nei Yisrael. So on a pasuk level, it's clear vayihi acharei ha-magefa that this plague that comes about as a result of the zanut with the Benot Moav, that this plague somehow produces, that the counting, that the census is a result of whatever happened in the previous story. That's in the same pasuk. And yet, because it's a new topic, the Torah breaks up with, meaning on a paragraph level, it's a totally new concept, a totally new idea. So we have this story which doesn't seem to be linked to either Balak or the census, and yet half of it appears in one, half of it appears in the other. There's an indication that it's connected to both, but it's not obviously connected to either. But significantly enough connected to both that the Torah cuts the story in half and puts half of it where it doesn't seem to belong in Balak, and half of it where it doesn't seem to belong in Pinchas. So what we're going to try to do today is to try to better understand this issue, what's happening here, and how it actually connects to both, and sets up the entirety of Parshat Balak, and leads into the second census, the second counting of Bnei Yisrael, which is hugely important to Sefer Midbar because, as we talked about in the first year in our series on Sefer Midbar, that Bamidbar in Chazal is referred to as Chumash HaPikudim. It's the book of counting. This is that second counting. So let's get into it. Is the question clear? Any questions on the question? Good? Okay. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin explains the connection between this story, we'll look back first, and the story of Balak, and Parshat Balak. When Bilam gives over his final vision, his final prophecy to Balak, we talked about last time, the first two, Kadosh Baruch Hu forces that klala into bracha, the third one he opens himself up to let his klala be turned into bracha, and then the fourth one is after Balak finally says, get out of here! Enough with this. You clearly aren't doing your job. Get out. Go home. Run away with your tail between your legs. And so Bilam responds, before I go, I've got one last thing to tell you. And he gives a prophecy about the interaction between Klal Yisrael and all of the other nations that will come about at the end of days. And the pasuk opens as follows in source number 2. V'ata hineni holech la'ami. I will go back to my people. But before I go, lecha yatzecha asher yaseh amazel amacha b'acharit hayamim. Behold, I will give you advice. What advice? It's a whole bunch of prophecies about what will happen as an interaction between Klal Yisrael and the Jewish people. Then it's what advice?
Who's saying this to you again?
Bilam says to Balak, I will go back to people, fine. But before I go, I have one last thing to tell you, and that's that last prophecy of the end of days. But he says, before I go, I want to give you advice about, and then what will happen to you and the rest of the nations in the end of days. What's this advice? So Chazal pick up on this, and they say, well, there was advice there. There was some very important advice that happened there that led to a very tragic consequence for Klal Yisrael. Says Chazal, source number 3, Masechet Sanhedrin. So skip to the underline. Amar lahem. Elokehem shel elu sone zima hu. He says, here I'll give you advice. My advice is as follows. Adding in even word, meaning Chazal is adding something in, and we'll expand on what Chazal is saying here. Bilam recognized after 3 times that Bnei Yisrael is mivorach, that Bnei Yisrael is baruch. They're blessed. That's who they are. It's what they are. And there's no way to curse Klal Yisrael. There's no way to impose Klala on Klal Yisrael when there are people who are in a state of bracha. And that constantly comes up in Bilam's actual brachot. I can't bless them. I can't curse them. They're not cursed. I can only bless them because they're blessed. It's not possible. I can't break through that. So says Bilam to Balak, I'll leave you with a piece of advice. If you want to bring a reality of Klala to Klal Yisrael, you can't impose it on top of the bracha. You have to break their connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You need to break their connection to that bracha. And I'll tell you the best way, and we talked about the context of why that would be last year. But what you need to do is, in order to break that reality of bracha, that connectivity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the way to break that, Elokeihem shel Yisrael sone zimahu. He hates sone. He hates Zima. He hates Arayot. Bring them to a place of Zima. And Balak here, in the way the Gemara goes on, literally beat for beat, gives this whole strategic plan of how to slowly but surely entice the Bnei Yisrael to Mizaneh with the Benot Moav. To create this reality of seduction. He really, beat by beat, goes through it with them. But that's the advice that he leaves them with. I didn't put the whole Gemara, it's a complicated thing, but if you look in the Gemara there and from source number 3, so it goes on for a while in terms of, again, kind of how to put one zone on the outside and the tent, one on the inside of the tent, and you want to sell them a certain type of cloth because that will, something that they're interested in, and there's like this whole back and forth, it goes on for a while. But that's the key of his advice to Balak. Meaning that what happens at the end of Parshat Balak, when the Benot Moav, go out to seduce Klal Yisrael, that is the end of Parshat Balak. Because it's Bilam saying, I can't curse them, but if you want to bring a reality of curse to them, do what I'm telling you to do. Break that connectivity, and the curse will come.
Why'd he do that?
Because he still hates the Jewish people.
But he's still the one that blessed them and saw that they were a nation.
Bilam is concerned with one thing and one thing only, his kavod and his wealth. I guess there's 2 things, although they're linked. His kavod and his wealth, and he walked away with neither. He walked away with no money, and he walked away told, you're a failure, go back to your people. Whose fault is that? It's harder to blame himself. It's much easier to blame Klal Yisrael. I mean, just even on a pshat level, I don't think he was super happy with Klal Yisrael by the time that story ended. Chazal brings out that because of this, once that bracha was cut off through the advice of Bilam, says in source number 4 on the bottom, the second underline on the bottom, Amar Rav Abba Bar Kahana, that all of the klalot that were turned into brachot by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so kulam chazru liklala, because of this, all of those klalot that were transformed into brachot, because of what happened with the Benot Moav, got turned back into klala. We don't receive any of those brachot. The only one that stands the test of time, the only one that doesn't get transformed back, for whatever reason, is Matovo Alecha Yaakov, which is why we still quote it to this day, because it remains a bracha of Klal Yisrael, for whatever reason. And that's what he says here. And the understanding of the Gemara here was Chuz Matei Kenesiot Matei Midrashot, that that was what Matovo Alecha Yaakov is referring to. Now listen here also, Rav, I do listen to other shirim also, Rav Moshe Shapiro, had a very long shir, a very deep piece. Where he, but one of the things that he pointed out here was, this is Moshe in Sefer Devarim relating the story of what happened with Bilam to Bnei Israel. And the way that Moshe phrases this is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned all of the klala into bracha. Why? Ki ahivcha Hashem Elokecha. Because there's a bond of love between God and the Jewish people. So Moshe Shapiro points out, very simply, almost, that if it's the ahava of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Klal Yisrael that creates reality of bracha, so then what did Bilam jump at? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sonei zima. By bringing out a reality of sin'ah that was able to break that ahava, and that was able to return the klalot, the brachot to klalot. Very beautiful thing that he put together in terms of that piece. He then goes on, I'm still processing it, to deeply understand what the nature of the Yetzer Hara is and how it relates to both Avodah Zarah and Arayot. And I hope to process it well enough that we do the Midrashah this year, so we'll have probably a shir on that. But he goes into very, very complex and amazing piece about how that works, and hopefully we'll get into that at another time. But in any event, so all of the klalot then come back. The brachot are overturned and they come back to be klalot. Coming back to our story, what this means is that what happens here between Bnei Yisrael and the Benot Moav, understanding it in context, is that it's not just a sin of Klal Yisrael. This sin, this episode with the Benot Moav, breaks open the issue of Arayos in Klal Yisrael. Every time that Klal Yisrael is going to struggle with Arayot, it's always going to have its roots back in the story of the Benot Moav. This is the first time that we deal, struggle with, fail in the Yishuvah. This is the first time that the Beit Yisrael that we spend so much time in Sefer Shemot building up, that Beit Yisrael gets infiltrated and gets broken. And all of the roots of Znut and Klal Yisrael are going to find, Klal Yisrael as a whole are going to find its way back here. The same way, none of you, Elior, you probably were, most of you were not here when we discussed Sefer Bereshit, but we actually discussed another instance where on a Maaseh Avot Siman Libanim level, where not Beit Yisrael was penetrated, but Beit Yaakov broke down, which was in the Maaseh of Dina and Shechem, excellent. Now it's also fascinating there, excellent, what's fascinating there is that who were the two individuals in that story who went and stormed Shechem and destroyed Shechem, brought it to the ground? Shimon and Levi. And in a Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim level, these two complicated individuals who struggle with Yaakov afterward, the true faces of them also seem to finally be surfacing here. Because Zimri is from Shevet Shimon. And so his true face, on a certain level, seems to come out. And who is it that kills Zimri, Pinchas from Shevet, Levi, and the struggle of who's really coming in a genuine way, even from that story back with Dina, comes to play itself out in its own way here as well, in the confrontation between Zimri and Pinchas. Okay. So to sum up the Parshat Balak piece, it's very much linked, because again, utilizing that piece from Rosh Shapiro as well, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves Klal Yisrael. Bilam recognized that he wasn't going to be able to break through the bracha that comes from that ahava unless you break the ahava itself with sinah. So Bilam suggests to Balak to create a reality of sinah through Znut, and so he sends the Benot Moav. It breaks that down. The plague comes and is able to eradicate 24,000 people until it's Pinchas who stems that, who stops that from happening. So Parshat Balak has context. How in the world does that have anything to do with the census? Right, we're technically in Parshat Pinchas, right? That was the goal of today, was talking a little bit about Parshat Pinchas. What in the world does that have to do with Parshat Pinchas and the census? So then put the whole story of Pinchas in Balak, but put it here, not only to put it here, not only in its own paragraph, but where the whole pasuk is split in half, where the pasuk tells us vayiach harei ha-magifah, that the magifah, this whole incident and the loss of those people, leads into the census. What's the connection? So let's now build up the other side. What?
It's all part of one big narrative.
Yes, it's always going to be the answer that's part of one big narrative.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, absolutely.
Is Pinchas doing the killing, the Magefa, or the Magefa?
He kills Zimri and Cosby, and that stems the Magefa.
Stems or like stops?
Stops. Okay. Yes. The Magefa is over. It ends. Okay. This counting in Parshat Pinchas, in our Parsha, is the second and final counting of Chumash HaPikudim, which is, again, the book of counting. The first one is in Parshat Bamidbar, and the second one is here in Parshat Pinchas. Think about it for a second. Why would there be a need? Very simply, don't think too deeply. Why would there be a need for a second counting? What's the difference between the counting here and the counting that we had in Parshat Bamidbar? What happened? Well, the plague we'll get back to. That wasn't obvious. What Eliora said was much more obvious, which is 38 years passed, and we have a whole new generation. The generation that was counted in Parshat Bamidbar no longer exists. Because of Chet HaMeraglim, we talked about this also in the past, because of Chet HaMeraglim, instead of it being one fluid motion, where the Yotzei Mitzrayim, the people who left Mitzrayim, were going to be the same generation that was Ba'ei HaAretz, Chet HaMeraglim cracked history open, divided the Jewish people in half, and created a reality where we have a generation that is, in and of itself, its identity is Yotzei Mitzrayim, and a whole new generation where their whole new identity is the Dora, Ba'ei HaAretz. But they're a totally different generation. 38 years passed, we have a whole new generation, and they need to be counted. And like we just said, they have a whole new identity. Because what did we say? What is counting all about? What does counting do?
Limits.
Not in Parshat Balak. When we talked about counting in Parshat Bamidbar, the loving counting of Klal Yisrael in Parshat Bamidbar, it does limit it in a certain way, but there are two sides to it. The way that we talked about in Parshat Bamidbar, is that what counting does is that what Sefer Bidbar is about the rise of the individual. That counting somebody gives them significance, gives them meaning, it fixes for them their goal, their purpose, their tachlit. So on that sense, they are much more limited, 100%, and that still fits with what we talked about last time. But reaching back to Parshat Bamidbar, and what we talked about there, that what counting does is it gives rise to each individual in the context of Klal Yisrael, giving them a goal, striving for something, understanding their role within the context of the whole. As we talked about there as well, we quoted it a few times, the Mishnah, Ein lecha davar she'ein lo makom. No thing, everything must have a place. And so the second that something's counted, it has its own unique identity, and that unique identity has to be linked to a space in reality. What was the space in reality that we created in Parshat Bamidbar?
The
encampments in the desert.
Yeah.
Because they are the door of Yotzei Mitzrayim, the door of the Midbar, Dor HaMidbar. So they have their space within the Midbar. And so after that counting, there's their fixed space by Shevet, within the four Degalim, in the encampment around the Mishkan in the desert. This new generation needs to be counted. They need to have their own unique identity as a generation, their own unique identity as individuals, as people who are going to be Ba'ei HaAretz, people who are entering into Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, this counting also needs to, if they're going to rise as new individuals, they're also going to need a new Makom. Linked, right? Fluid thinking. Makom. What Makom do we need to give them for the door Ba'ei HaAretz?
Oh, we're going to divide up the land.
Exactly. We need to count them in order to give them their own unique identity as the door Ba'ei HaAretz, and also their chelek in Eretz Yisrael. It's not me superimposing that onto the story. It's explicit in the text. Take a look inside. At the very conclusion of the counting, source number 5, the conclusion of the counting when it's finished. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Limor, source number 5. For these people you will divide up the land, benachala, by portion, b'mispar shemot, based on the number of people. Meaning the entire amount of Eretz Yisrael that each Shevet was going to get was going to be determined by how many people were in that Shevet. But this counting gives rise to the identities of the individuals who will be Ba'ei HaAretz, and also gives them their location within the context of Eretz Yisrael. These two countings have very specific functions. And everything follows through logically in that sense. We don't normally think about it this way, but if each area of Eretz Yisrael is inhabited by a specific Shevet, then that means that on a deeper level that there's a connectivity between the essence of that Shevet and that area of Eretz Yisrael. Who lives living more to the north? Who's living more to the south? Who's by the Yam HaGadol? Who sits by the border on the Kinneret? Who's in the middle? Who's interspersed? The same way, like again, we didn't give content to it in Bamidbar either, but the same way that each of those groups of the Galim were given north, south, east, and west, and we said that it has to be deeply linked to the identity of that Shevet, of those Shvatim, of that Degel. So too, each one's identity is going to be deeply linked to the nature of the part of the land that it becomes linked to. That explains why we need a second census. It gives context to the psukim. It fits within our narrative of the fact that this new generation has risen up and they are the door by Eha'aretz, so of course we need to count them again, and that counting is going to lead them in. The counting is going to be all about them being the door by Eha'aretz. What's the only thing that we haven't answered yet? Our question. What does that have to do with Pinchas? That this whole counting, we've now defined the context of the counting, the content of the counting. Why we're counting them again? Why is that introduced to the words Vayihi acharei ha-magifa? As a result of the magifa, now we can count, now we can learn. So what does that mean? Eretz Yisrael is originally, you see where this is going? Eretz Yisrael, it's a theme that we come back to all the time. But Eretz Yisrael is originally given to Avraham Avinu in the context of a very specific brit. He is given Eretz Yisrael in the context of, in Lech Lecha, in the context of Brit Milah. It is in that paragraph of Parshat Lech Lecha, in that context in Parshat Lech Lecha, that Avraham is told, you will inherit this land in the context of Brit Milah. And to the extent that Avraham Avinu will commit himself, devote himself to the realities of Brit Milah, to that extent is he deserving of, can he maintain Eretz Yisrael? Those two things are inextricably linked. Eretz Kana'an, Eretz Yisrael, is a land of commitment to Brit Milah, and anything that is antithetical to Brit Milah cannot be sustained by the land. We know this not only philosophically, but once again the Psukim bring it out. If we reach back to the Parshat Ha'arayot itself, in Parshat Achrimot, the end of Parshat Achrimot deals with all of the issues of Arayot. So at the end of that Parsha, says the Chumash, in source number 6, Al titz'amu bechol eile, ki bechol eile nitme'u hagoyim asher ani meshaleach mitnechem. Don't become tamei in any of these things, because these are the things that the nations who are there, which I'm going to throw out, this is how they purified themselves. Vatitzma ha'aretz, vafkod ona aleha, vataki ha'aretz et yoshveha. Because, says the Chumash, because the people who live in Eretz Kanaan are a people of Arayot, the land will, in the words of the Chumash, will vomit them out. It's not even a punishment. It's an action-reaction. It's a consequence. The same way that when a person eats food, and that food can't be digested by the body, it can't exist within the system of that body, the body's not punishing the food. The body can't live with that food inside of it. And that's what happens, that when a person vomits out that food, it's because there was something poisonous in that system that the body is rejecting. So too, by B'nai Yisrael, the poison in the land of Eretz Yisrael that it rejects Arayot. To be only as explicit as the Chumash, it vomits out Arayot. People of Arayot. People who make that a part of who they are. And not only that, but then that's actually then reframed in the same words as a warning to Klal Yisrael. Be careful not to do what they're doing, Pasuk Chafchet in source number 6. V'lo takia aretz etchem b'tamachem ota. Don't let the land vomit you out by becoming tamei. Kasher ka'at agoy asher lifnechem, like it's going to vomit out the people who are in front of you. again, concepts we've come back to many times. All of Eretz Yisrael revolves around a center point, and that center point is Yerushalayim. And all of Yerushalayim revolves around a center point, and that is Beit HaMikdash. And all of Beit HaMikdash revolves around the center point, which is the Kodesh HaKodeshim. And the Kodesh HaKodeshim, at its very center, stands. It's for everybody in the room. He's been through this before a few times. In the Kruvim. The Kruvim stand at the center of Eretz Yisrael. We've talked about it as the center of the world, center of the universe, the center of our own inner worlds. Very locally here, it is the center of Eretz Yisrael. It is what Eretz Yisrael is, at its heart, at its root, at its center. It is the land of Kruvim. It is the land of two, on a macrocosmic scale, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, on a microcosmic scale of an Ish and an Isha, a husband and a wife of two individuals, being in a space, being in a reality where they are the only people in that space, like we talked about, that space of privacy, of modesty, a place that nobody else has access to, that nobody else sees, where there's that singular relationship of total devotion, of total love, of real love, not love like the other, like the outside world pretends love is. A reality of true love that stands between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what's at the center. A reality of ne'emanut, which we've talked about in the past, of dedication, of total dedication one to another. A reality of dedication only to one other thing, to the exclusion of all others. Like when a man to a woman under chuppah says, Harei at mikudeshli, which we talked about. The Kedusha is all about creating a framework of relationship where you are separated to me, to the exclusion of all other people. That's Eretz Yisrael. Complete dedication between Klal Yisrael and the Jewish people. Complete dedication to being anti-Arayot, and anti-Znut, which the Torah itself, and Tanakh, throughout Tanakh, when it talks about Znut, when it talks about Avodah Zarah, it also talks about Avodah Zarah in the language of Znut. We're mizaneh against the Kadosh Baruch Hu when we go after other gods. Because that's what it is. That's the context and what we're talking about of those Kruvim. And so too, obviously, when Arayot enters into a reality law of Klal Yisrael, it's antithetical to what the land is about. Antithetical to what Bnei Yisrael are supposed to have to be about. It's an Am Kadosh. As an Am Kadosh with the Beit HaMikdash at the center, with the Kodesh HaKodeshim in the center of that, with the two Kruvim in the center of that. That's why the first thing that we do when we enter Eretz Yisrael, right? We're on our Vot Moav Al Yadin Recho, we're at the border, we're going to stay here for the rest of Chumash. When do we then actually enter into Eretz Yisrael? Sefer Yehoshua. Not the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, it takes a few prakim. We finally cross over in the prakim Gimel and Dalet, and we finally land in Perek Hey. And the first thing we do when we enter Eretz Yisrael, it's the only thing that we can do when we get to Eretz Yisrael, the first thing we have to do, Yeshua, the first thing he does when we enter into Eretz Yisrael, a land of Brit, a land of Brit Milah, a land of Kiddusha in that way, the first thing that Yeshua does, all of Klal Yisrael immediately gets Brit Milah. Because it's a land of Brit. And that generation that was born in the desert did not have Brit Milah. And so the moment they come into Eretz Yisrael, the moment they settle into their new reality, the first thing that needs to happen is Brit Milah. Because it's a land that revolves around, that can only be settled in a reality of Brit Milah. All this brings us back to our parasha. We've arrived in our Vot Moav, our last station before entering into Eretz Yisrael, and it brings out a need for a second counting of Bnei Yisrael for the purpose of identifying each individual's share, their chilek, their portion, their plot of land, their reality within the context of Eretz Yisrael. But before this can happen, before one can be considered for having a share in Eretz Yisrael, seems to be brought out by these psukim, those individuals need to go through a test of Brit. The Maaseh with the Benot Moav, the issue in the beginning of Parshat Pinchas, is Bnei Yisrael having to go through a test of Brit Milah. Those who passed that test can then be validly counted and can be given a chelak and call it in Eretz Yisrael, can be given a ticket into Eretz Yisrael. Those who don't pass the test, they're wiped out in the plague because they cannot be counted as part of those who are going to have a chelak in Eretz Yisrael. This incident is a cleansing of the system of Klal Yisrael, a painful cleansing of the system of Klal Yisrael, with regards to Brit and Arayot, so that Eretz Yisrael is given over only to those who are dedicated to Brit, only to those who are dedicated to Brit Milah, only to those who are dedicated to Kiddushah in that way. It's a result of this plague and this cleansing that Klal Yisrael have been able to be counted. And that's why the very paragraph itself opens up. Vayihi acharei ha-magifa. It's not even at the conclusion of the Maaseh of the Benot Moav. The way that it's phrased is once the plague has ended, once those people who were mezaneh are wiped out, once those people who could not maintain a reality of Kedushah in regards to Brit, once they are gone, now we can count those who are able to enter into Eretz Yisrael. Before we take it to its more uplifting and happier conclusion, it's a lot of food for thought in terms of what Eretz Yisrael is, what it means for us, hopefully as people who want to eventually get to Eretz Yisrael, who want to settle Eretz Yisrael, who we need to be, what Eretz Yisrael is now, the struggles in Eretz Yisrael that it experiences, and how it may or may not be linked to issues of whether or not the people, Am Yisrael, in Eretz Yisrael, are they a people of Brit? Are they a people of Kiddushah or not? And the struggles in Eretz Yisrael over those issues, which may be L'Shem Shemayim and may not, but certainly should be L'Shem Shemayim, and are certainly valid issues. Because Eretz Yisrael can only exist, but we'll only be able to stay there. We will not be vomited out, Lo Aleinu, Chas V'Shalom, though we've seen it in the last decade, is if we remain a people of Brit. It's the Pesukim themselves. It's not theory, it's not out there. And Baruch Hashem, despite the issues that we have, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has let us stay there. But we shouldn't take that gift for granted. The fact that this whole counting, switching gears, and again, ending on a more positive note and seeing the brighter side of the parasha. Hi. We're just finishing up. You're welcome to sit if you can join in if you want.
I just came to that
moment. Okay. Good too. Is that when you look in the context of that paragraph, and I gave you the whole paragraph here in source number 7, there's a beautiful expression of this in the wording of the counting itself. There's a notable difference in the language of the counting here as opposed to the counting in Parshat Bamidbar. Look at the way that the Torah emphasizes the context of the counting. Not that it wasn't mentioned in Bamidbar, but it was not emphasized in Parshat Bamidbar. Take a look at the second underline when we start actually counting those people. Pasuk Hey, source number 7. Reuven, Bechor Yisrael. Bnei Reuven, Chanoch, Mishpachat HaChanochi. Lefalu, Mishpachat HaPilui. Lechatzron, Mishpachat HaChatzroni. Lecharmi, Mishpachat HaKarmi. Ele Mishpachot HaReuveni, Vayu Bekodehem Bechule. What keeps being emphasized here? Mishpacha, family. It's all about family. It's all about a dedication to that bayit. It's all about a dedication to those relationships. And while the concept of mishpacha was mentioned in Bamidbar, here every single one that's counted, they're counted by mishpacha, by family unit, emphasizing the closeness that exists, that needs to exist in the reality of a bayit in Klal Yisrael, to be able to inherit Eretz Yisrael. The Zohar even takes this one step further. If you go back and look at those same very words, something happens to each family when it's counted by its mishpacha. Listen again sensitively. Bnei Reuven, Chanoch l'mishpachat, mishpachat ha-chanuchi. Lefalu mishpachat ha-pilui. What happens to the name of the mishpacha once it gets counted? What?
They get a yud.
Not just a yud, it gets two letters.
A hey
and a yud. That once they are counted, Zohar points out, each mishpacha receives the letters a yud and a k, a yud and a hey. The same name that a husband and a wife receive when they're married and become one. It's expressed in this chazal, which is often minimized by being quoted at Shever Brachos, but is actually very important and meaningful chazal. Source number 8. Tana Dishmei Rabbi Meir. Ish v'isha. Shechina b'nehem yudke. When you bring an ish and an isha together, the two letters that differentiate them, that are then joined together when a husband and a wife get married and become one, are the letters yud and k. And if not, yud ba'ish v'he ba'isha. Zachu shechina b'nehem miparchin. If they're zocheh, the shechina will rest within them. What allows for us to enter into Eretz Yisrael and to build the Beit HaMikdash, which is the ultimate place of the resting of the Shekhinah, the permanent resting of the Shekhinah in Klal Yisrael. Not the traveling Mishkan, to build that bayit of Beit HaMikdash, is that dedication to Brit. It's by being Mishpachot. It's by being those families. It's by remaining together and dedicated, by living up to being the antithesis to Arayot. That's what allows us to inherit the land, and that's why in the counting itself we're counting Mishpacha, and that's why we get added the name Yudkei, which is the name that comes upon a family when they live as an Ish and Isha should live in a way where the Shekhinah is part of that house. When they get that name, that family receives the Shekhinah resting on it in a way where it is justified being a chelek in the land of Brit in Eretz Yisrael. It's justified being a mishpacha with a bayit that has the Shekhinah resting within it, in the land, where the centerpiece of that land is Beit HaMikdash, with the Shekhinah resting within it as well, Bezrat Hashem Mihira B'Aminu. And I think, and this was very exciting when also I saw this source inside in particular, we made a logical leap last time, in the end of Shir, the second half of Shir, where we claimed that Matov Olecha Yaakov, that when the tents of Yaakov make sure what the bracha there was, not like the Gemara here in a different chazal, was that the doorways of the tents wouldn't face each other. And what we claimed last time was that the reason that creates a reality of bracha is because it's samoy min ha'ayin. You can't see it. When you can't see something, it's mitbarech. And I said last time that when you can't be seen, you can be infinite, and the infinite can enter in, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu can enter in, and then the bracha can enter in. But that was a jump. That was a jump to say that the bracha is drawing from an infinite source, and the Shekhinah dwells in that reality. Look at the way that it's phrased here. As a result of that, in a response to this whole Ma'aseh, look back at that Gemara. It intentionally, I think, links the two, which is linking together all of the issues of Parsha, the narrative of Parsha Balak into Parsha Pinchas. Zachu Shekhinah b'nehen u mitbarchin, because the two are linked, like we claimed last time. Then, if we live up to this, if we live up to the tzniut of Klal Yisrael, if we live up to being a people who are anti-Ariot, the people of Kiddusha, then the Shekhinah rests within us, and Mimela, automatically, what are we? We are able to draw out that bracha that we had so desperately wanted from Parshat Balak. And so all of these three stories are one flow, in a way where there still are individual Parshiot dealing with different themes. But that story of the Benot Moav relates deeply to the themes of Parshat Balak, concluding with a being cut off from Bracha, concluding with Klala, concluding with the last Pasuk being defined as 24,000, finally getting a number, Lo Alinu, who have died, because we're limited, we're Mikulal, we're in a state of Klala. But also giving birth to the beginning of Parshat Pinchas, where Parshat Pinchas creates a reality of understanding that if we live up to it like Pinchas did, because he starts off the parsha like Pinchas did, if we live up to being those people, then what do we receive? What does Pinchas receive? What's the wording? He receives a brit shalom, shalom bayit. He receives a brit shalom. A brit, he's living up to a reality of brit and recognizing that it comes from the shalom, that the ultimate shalom that comes about, which is the shalom, shalom bayis. The shalom of purity in these areas. Then we can start counting. Then we can start identifying the individuals of Klal Yisrael. Then we can give them a chilek, a nachla, and Eretz Yisrael, a land of brit. Be'ezrat Hashem, we should all be zocha to live up to being a people of brit in the image of Avram Avinu, to living up to being a mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh, as we talked about so much in Sefer Vayikra, but to be a goy kadosh, to be a people who are kadosh, to be able to do that in our own personal lives, b'shatava mutzlachat, in our own personal families, and to be able to take those families and build those batim, those bayit ne'aman b'Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael, in a way that brings about the ultimate bayit of Klal Yisrael, the Beit HaMikdash, itself in a reality of Kiddushah, in a reality of Shechinah that permeates all of Klal Yisrael.